Strike a Chord Podcast, music chit chat with your hosts Valentina Gikowski and Amla Piriakabu.
Hey everyone, welcome to Strike a Chord Podcast. We have the wonderful Laura Delvira here, a multi-instrumentalist. Thank you so much for joining
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me, and cake and tea.
Yes.
What a privilege.
Laura, good to have you.
Good to be here.
Yeah, good to have you on board. We know each other. Coming from the flamenco background. Mm. So Laura is a great musician.
Thank you.
And a fantastic flamenco guitarist. And also sings and plays. Something that is very rare these days. So
yeah,
it's up
very
there,
kind so. Words. Thank you.
But it's good to have you.
It's been a while since we've seen each other.
We had a chat about 2 weeks ago, and I asked you to come along.
Yeah,
and mm-hmm. have a bit of a broader chat.
So happy to be here, and especially just touching base with you a couple of weeks ago. It was really nice to just have a bit of a chat about music and.
As you do.
Have it run into this conversation is great.
As you do, we always have. It's always good to have a chat about music. Mm-hmm. Amla and I do it all the time.
Mm-hmm. That's all do we?
We that's all we talk about, just music.
And always with the microphones too or something?
yeah, look, it's a bit of this, bit of that, you know.
Yep.
If it's something more off mic, we'll do it off mic. We'll take that offline.
Yep.
Good to have you along. Just for a bit of... A bit of background information. You don't not only play funny guitar, but you also play a bit of piano and you sing and you also write music.
I try. Usually either I write something by accident or if there's a really, really specific meaning and nothing in
though.
Between. Yeah.
That's how you do it. Either by accident or for specific meaning. You don't go intentionally, I'm going to write a song about this.
Sure.
And in the next 5 minutes, it's going to be done. It doesn't work like that.
Mm-hmm. That's really nice to hear because I think a lot of the time with music, you just think, okay, I'm doing it this way, but I imagine it's different for everyone else. So just a comment like that is so nice to hear.
Yeah, and it just comes and when it does, you enjoy the ride, you know?
Yep.
You're also a speech pathologist.
I am, yeah. So I always say speech pathologist by day, musician by night, but then you end up playing in nursing homes, so then it's by day as well.
So is that where the connection is?
That's must be.
That's, you got contacts. The big gigs, mate.
Yeah.
Valentino mentioned you're also a speech pathologist and I noticed that I have troubles with the words with TH in them. So
you're not alone. The number of times I've stumbled saying I'm a speech pathologist, the irony is not lost on me. But in all honesty, I think it's really nice to have the connection to a career that, you know, gives that little bit of stability. I don't think I could quite pay all the bills with music at this point, but to have something that I didn't expect it to be connected to music when I started and when I was studying, but now say I'm doing voice therapy with people and if I'm even when I'm teaching pronunciation, I'll take maybe a bit more of a rhythmic route and that can be really helpful for people. So there's it's an overlap.
So
I mean
you're not the standard speech pathologist. You got
perhaps
the
not.
But that connection is quite logical though. And it's quite obvious to us musicians.
To us musicians. That's it.
But making things rhythmical or melodic, people get to remember that a bit easier.
Yep.
So
That's a really great
strategy.
Strategy. And I'm curious about your lyrics and like even how you sing. Obviously I can imagine you'd be I was going to say a word that I shouldn't say, really, really good.
Oh my goodness, that's very kind of you to say. To be honest, I feel that my singing is something that I'm now really starting to enjoy, but it's never been the main event for me. I've always been the person playing the music and then at most singing harmonies. And so actually, interestingly, when I started trying to work on my own singing voice, I had a friend who's a singing teacher who was helping me out and she said, do you realize you're sharp on everything you sing, but when you sing the harmony above, you're spot on? And so I think I trained myself. I mean, I'm not very good at, say, lower harmonies, but I can generally hear maybe a third above, something like that. That's it. Exactly right. Just without the dance moves, without the clicking. I think when you wiggle your way through any kind of path, you work out what works for you. And I think just you flip-flop between, am I a guitarist? Am I a singer? Am I a guitarist who happens to sing? And then all the psychology that goes along with those labels.
I can relate to that because I sing out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
And I sing behind my instrument.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And it makes me a bit more comfortable to sing behind my instrument because I can accompany it and sing and whatever. But your singing is actually in front. So that that's big. It's not some easy feat, and it's not something that everyone has a lot of confidence in doing as well. So
I appreciate you saying that because I think that I still see myself as someone who needs to also be playing the guitar or also be playing the piano.
And so you should. So you should. But both your instruments they balance out. They go in and out. So when you're accompanying, they go in. Whereas with me, I'd like to hammer my guitar a bit more, and so I can cover up my my singing. You know,
I'm sure if we heard you, we'd say, "Let that voice loose." Yeah, it'll be wonderful.
I don't know.
Finesse the flow.
Yeah, I'm as good. I'm just got perfect pitch.
Oh, but look, that's interesting. I love not love that you were sharp. You're saying you're sharp, but I love the comment because it's. Yeah. I've been listening to. I'm working on becoming a solo vocalist.
Great.
I can't speak now in front of speech therapy.
You're getting nervous.
We judge less than the average person. I can promise you that. No, we do.
But I'm noticing that I do tend to go sharp because I normally do harmonies as well.
Yeah.
And it's a lot. Mm-hmm. You don't realize they're two different aspects when you're singing a solo. Sure. It's very interesting that you brought it up. I find that really, really,
For sure. And you know what? Sometimes I think about, without wanting to go too scientific, but you know when you, say, take a piano or a guitar with frets and there's the science behind it that it's not really in tune, it's kind of that.
Yeah. Mm.
I wonder whether with our voices we go to that precise harmony.
Yes, I know exactly what you're saying.
You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so maybe there's a little bit of a difference. And so maybe according to the instrument, it's sharp. But if we're actually locking in with other voices, it's spot on. Who knows? Who knows?
What is sharp, though? This is the thing, because there are so many different modes and scales and everything there and microtones. And so if you're sharp in normal standard Western scales, that's fine. But you probably have to sing a different genre, a different language.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
What a good point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also, I think singing harmony is easier if you know how to sing harmony. If you're singing always in the main voice, to teach yourself to sing harmony, I think it's a bit harder.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, whereas if you're back up harmony and you're singing harmony, it's going to be easier to sing the
lead.
That's
a great point.
I think
absolutely.
That's for me because I used to back up my dad when he was singing, and As you do, sometimes you find a bit of flaws in there, and then you have to show him this is where the pitch is bang, and I have to be pretty dead on.
Yeah,
and he never used to like it, but that's a different But this is, I think, I found it easier going that way rather than singing and finding it out from that avenue.
Mm-hmm. I think I've got a fairly funny story in terms of why I did latch onto the harmonies first. Mm. And if I track it back all the way to where I think it started, I think it comes from working 7 years in retail at Target, and they played the same CD for a month of just the 1 hour of music. And the only way that I could maintain any kind of sanity was, okay, this time around, listen to the guitar. This time around, listen to the drums, listen to the bass. And so that sort of developed my ear to be picking things out of music. And
analyzing
then it eventually got, because I don't think I could hear the harmonies in the vocals at that time. But then once I got through, and it was kind of like, okay, well, what? Maybe I listened to that other voice. And then it just became driving in the car. Why sing the melody when you can sing the harmony?
That's right.
Maybe not even realizing what I was doing, but that's how I got there.
I think back then the artists were happy because they used to get a lot of royalties from Kmart and Targets playing their songs.
Good point.
That was their moneymaker. I don't know what it is now. I don't think so. But but then it was if you're a musician and wherever you'd go, you'd listen to it, wherever it's Target or restaurant or something, and you listen to anything and you have that third harmony in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah, trying to figure it out.
I feel like that's the same way I probably ended up doing harmonies, a similar thing, even just in lectures if you're bored.
Spirits.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of common there.
Yeah.
Like if you're hearing something that's feeling mundane, you start to analyze it and look at it in a
Definitely.
Yeah.
We're onto something.
Always, and it's funny, and it's probably for both of you, when you hear that
I've heard you do it for sure when you hear the melody, and it's just off the bat you're in the third harmony.
Oh yeah,
straight away. It's like
it's a habit now.
Yeah, it's too boring to sing the lead. I'll just do the third and possibly even the fifth.
Mm-hmm. We're doing it today.
Yeah, we're doing it today.
Yeah. Right, love it. I'm with my people.
Now you're with your obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
An artist here in Melbourne?
It's an interesting question because I don't think I have a comparison elsewhere. So anything I say will just be entirely my experience as opposed to compared to anywhere else, apart from maybe a bit of busking in Spain, if I'm honest.
Well, that's even better. What is your
feel? What is your, your feel about the music here and the industry? You coming in and hanging out, having any other experience? How do you find how do you see it?
I feel that it's a place that offers you a lot of opportunities, and I think that about Australia in a lot of different ways, especially compared to other parts of the world, that we can to an extent create something from nothing. So let's say if you email around enough restaurants, eventually one will buy it. Yeah, and I made the joke about nursing homes before, but yeah, you can play in nursing homes and things like that. I've got a gig coming up playing just a media party for an engineering consultancy firm, so people find you, and so I think that there is the opportunity just to have these quite random gigs come up that are really enjoyable because of how random they are. I guess that also because I feel that I'm quite new to gigging only in the last couple of years, and so part of my relationship with gigging is just how I personally felt about putting myself out there. And when you feel, okay, have I got enough conviction at this point? Have I got enough skill to do it at this point? So I think a lot of my battle has actually been more internal than external. Yeah, absolutely. And then maybe just a couple of other features. For example, last weekend I played the most adorable gig at, it was a Spanish-themed lunch for a group of, say, six friends. And just one thing that did come to mind when I was contacted was, and perhaps this is an experience more so as a female, but that idea of, am I going to go to someone's house? How safe is that? And so that's not to dwell on that, because the gig was wonderful and so many of the other gigs I've had have been really enjoyable as well. But I think it's just to give an example of how broad the gigs can feel based on where they are, who they're for. I think particularly also having such a passion for flamenco, and that not obviously people know what it is here, but there's such a strong association with songs like, say, Gypsy King's music, which in and of itself is fantastic. But then you'll be in a restaurant slaving away, playing a song that you've slaved away over for months and months. No one will bat an eyelid, but then you'll play one of the greats. Yeah. And I guess I would react in that same way too. So I can't complain about that. But I think that maybe the point I'm eventually trying to get to is to say that I notice myself flip-flopping back and forth between, do I play what's meaningful to me, or do I play what the audience wants? And where do I find that middle ground? And
how do you do that?
Oh, good question. Again, I think everything is so psychological. Watch me psychoanalyze for this whole podcast.
That's all right,
I think that the labels we put on ourselves as musicians are critical and also very damaging. So I think that if I were to say, okay, do I have enough skill to call myself a flamenco guitarist yet? And let's say the answer to that is no, then it says, well, how do you bring yourself to practice enough flamenco if you don't identify yourself as a flamenco guitarist?
General, like a flamenco.
Yeah, that's it. And so then, going through and saying, I think that if I play this song to the point where it gives me chills, that I enjoy it so much, surely that's going to connect to the audience. Mm. And then the reality is that sometimes that doesn't happen. You'll be playing in front of people and you're loving life and there's just no connection there. And I will also admit that, playing in a restaurant is not a concert. People are, I love it that they're keeping to themselves and eating. I'd hate to drown out their conversations. But then on... Maybe I should start trying. And then on the other hand, when you might have what feels like more of a low stakes gig and you think everyone's enjoying it, and then afterwards you receive some interesting feedback and you think, where did that come from? What should I do next time I play for these people if they're asking for things that I don't even play? Do I go commit myself to learning this genre that I'm not even interested in, or do I stick to my guns and So yeah, I don't think I've answered your question. Just the enigma of that.
You have, and the answer is that there is no correct answer. There's no real answer because it all for me. I think there's a balance. You can learn a few songs that'll connect, but do them in your own way.
Yep.
And that's what. And if someone said, "Oh, I like how you played that song. It was different.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was a different good or different bad. No, different good. Different
yeah.
Bad.
Great.
But I think you do need to play some of these when you're doing those restaurant gigs and doing the gigs for the people and you know those sort of things where there's just a normal crowd. They're not coming to actually see you play and hear your repertoire, right?
Yes.
So you need to play for them really, like you have to answer. Not all the whole thing, but you have to have some sort of familiarity, like you know. You got to play Hotel California in your own way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
Hotel California.
You got to give them that thing, and then their ears will pick up and think, oh.
Yeah.
And then they'll probably go to someone and say, oh, you know, I went to this restaurant, and you know, there was this girl playing. She was playing, you know, Metallica, but in her own on her own guitar. You know? And that's what sticks, and I think that is very important that you've actually made them aware that you're there.
Yeah.
Whereas you can go and play your own little things and they're not even aware you're there.
Yep.
I've done it.
Yeah. So everyone, for sure.
Done it. But they're tough gigs. They're not easy gigs.
Mm-hmm.
They're not easy.
Yeah.
They're easy in the sense where you can experiment on some of the pieces that you've been rehearsing and practicing.
Yeah.
But I think that's where it all stops. Then you have to play some things where you have to.
Yeah.
You know. Some familiarity. Mm. You've done a bit of that, and you've tried to walk a few things in your own style.
I guess, like you said, like it depends on the setting. Like the restaurant gigs can be quite hard. You try not to take it personally when you're playing a song, and no one's batting an eyelid, and you're pouring your heart out, and you're really into it, but no one else is.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then sometimes they don't, like you said, they don't give you anything. I did a gig once at an Indian restaurant and I kept hitting my head on the stairwell. But I also, there were only like four people in the audience like eating their food. And I did the gig and I felt a bit like, oh, I played to no one. But then all the four people, they actually wanted my Instagram. You know, like sometimes you don't know, you don't think they're enjoying it, but they actually are enjoying
it.
That often happens.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't want to approach the artist as well. Yeah.
Do you think that's a thing about here in Australia? Do you think overseas that would be different?
Good question.
I've been overseas to a few countries and I've seen the same thing happen that way.
They don't want to bother. Like I found out, I only found this out recently. Like you don't realize as a musician, but a friend of mine who wasn't a musician wanted to talk to my friend who was a musician to tell them how great they were, but she was so shy. And I said, no, please do this. We need more of you to do this.
Yeah.
And she went up to him and said that was, and he like was really appreciative.
Of course.
But a lot of people I think are just too scared to approach musicians.
Yeah, perhaps.
And I think the timing of when they talk to you, is like I've noticed when I've finished my gear, I'm about to pack and about to leave, on my way out, I'll get stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's a more casual thing where if I'm at the stage or whatever corner it is that you're playing, I think that's a sacred spot. They think that it's so
good. Yeah, it's sacred.
But if they get you on your way out, it's a bit more casual. Like, you played great.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know?
Yeah, thinking back, I think it's been the same for me. Usually, maybe when I'm packing up or on the way out or, yeah.
The gig that we had at Berkey.
Which?
The last gig. When I was walking out, there was an old guy walking out with me. They were there, and I go, "Oh," he goes, "Thanks for playing Spain on Chick."
Lovely!
And it's just that thing.
Yeah. You know,
people like this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, they do this
definitely.
And whenever it is, whether it's when you're walking out or when you're setting up, it's good to get that feedback.
But even when we don't get it, I've realized that we take it. I find myself taking it, they sometimes are too shy to even say
that.
Filter the feedback and then we can talk. I once had a friend actually make a really good comment that I has stuck with me ever since. And this was maybe back when I was really trying to find that conviction to back myself and actually start reaching out to places. And she said, just setting up your equipment and whipping out a guitar, you're already winning. You've already got people's curiosity, even if they're eating, even if they're whatever type of gig it is.
Even walking through the door with a guitar case.
That's it, yeah.
It's like everyone's like, oh, there's a musician.
Hang yes, on. Yeah. And I think
there's another musician, and they think, oh, there's another musician.
There's another musician.
And you just go,
that's yeah, it.
I know exactly yeah, what you're going
to do now. So I think that there's...
guitar and,
yep.
And onwards and forwards.
That's it. There's just something so nice about knowing that, because that would be true for me watching something as well, that there is something that, whether we realize why or not, just to see that someone will be producing music and live, there's something about it being live that, yeah, you're already kind of in good stead with everyone, I think, yeah, which is a really nice comment to receive from that friend.
And that's part of the excitement for you as a musician as well. When you're walking to somewhere, you're about to start, you're about to do a gig, you enter gig mode.
Yep.
And funnily enough, for me, I don't really see anyone on the sides. Mm-hmm. I just hit for the stage to get set up. I need to set up.
Yeah.
Let me set up and then, But you don't see, and people are seeing what's going on. Mm-hmm. And you're just hitting, where's the stage? Where do I set up? Where do I, you're looking for the owner of the restaurant. Where do I set up?
I think especially with all the equipment, there are so many moving parts. So many things that if you forget one thing, so as we were saying just before recording, exactly, we're saying bring a spare of everything.
It's a big preparation.
Yeah, you have to be in that mode to just get everything set up so that you can then.
And the less you're ready, the less you're stressed, the better it is. You rock up a bit earlier, you set up, you make yourself zen.
Mm-hmm, yep.
You settle down, and then you kick it off. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're late and you're rushing around like a headless chook.
Yep.
And you're setting up, you're going to make a mistake. You're probably not going to even plug into the right input.
Absolutely.
I remember being like that once. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, oh, my guitar's not working. I've taken it out, put a new cable in, changed the battery. My volume wasn't up.
Oh, no.
And I felt like a right.
Yeah. Look, we've all done it. I was playing my flute once. It's pretty funny. I was outdoors and everyone was waiting for me to play and nothing was coming out. I had the flute stand inside my flute.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, like I had a portable one that I shoved inside there, but I forgot to pull it out. It took me a good while.
Especially that's nothing electronic. No. What on earth could have possibly happened? At least you got to check cables and things.
That's it. Out.
Yeah, just pure acoustic problem.
Yeah.
That's great.
It happens.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Laura, your background, Italian.
That's right. Yeah.
So where did the love of flamenco come in?
That's a great question. So another one of my many loves is language and language learning. So even though my family has really upheld a lot of Italian traditions, and I really feel like I've got quite a strong Italo-Australian identity, so the Italian's a big part of that. I didn't speak it growing up, and it's really ironic now being a speech pathologist and knowing the research behind how beneficial it is to have that bilingual input when you're younger. I just my mum's told me the story that when my older sister was born, she and my dad would speak Sicilian dialect to my sister, and then 2 years later when I came along, there was a teacher or someone who I can't quite remember who just said, oh no, you better not do that, they'll be so confused when they start school. And so for me, my parents didn't speak to me in Italian. So long story short, I studied Italian all through, studied it properly through high school, university, ended up being an obsession, but quite a healthy one. And then, the love of travel comes from that. And I just had this fascination with Spain that sort of came along with that, maybe the Mediterranean feel. And there came a point where I wanted to add another language, and it was just a logical choice. Okay, well, if I've got Italian, Spanish might be
a stone throw anyway. So.
Exactly. It'll be a nice head start. Meanwhile, at the same time, my sister had made a wonderful friend while she was studying at uni, who was from Cadiz in the south of Spain. Rafa, if you're listening to this, thank you for changing the course of my life. and so just spending time, all together as a group with him, and he was always talking about Andalusia in the south of Spain, and we would have this system where the three of us, if we went out, we would take turns driving. And so if Raf was driving, there would be flamenco playing. And I was just listening to this going, what is this? There's something about it. I love the clapping. I love the dissonance as well. And I don't think up until that point I'd ever realized that I even liked dissonance. I think I'd always, you know, been just listening to pop music on the radio. Yeah, yeah. And whereas maybe other people might hear that and go, oh, that's a bit strange. I'm not used to that. Not being used to it, to me, felt like it scratched some kind of itch in my brain. Like there's something different. There's something novel. And learning more about it. And then I did my master's, and while everyone else was scrambling looking for jobs, I said, absolutely not. I am taking off for a while. And so I spent 3 months in Cardiff. There was the idea to sort of maybe work in Spain at some point. And then speaking to Raf again, he said, look, just set yourself up there. My relatives are nearby if you need anything. And so with just this kind of preliminary love of flamenco before I even arrived, and then getting there and finally understanding what it meant. I remember there were some concerts, flamenco concert, and I'd go and I'd be sitting there going, where's the dancer? Where's that? Because it's, you know, there doesn't have to be a dancer. No, and then learning that it originates from the singing. It was just all very, very fascinating, to be honest.
Unless you go to the tourist.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Then you got.
Absolutely.
Where are the clicky things?
The clicky things.
The clicky things. The clicky things.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So that was the first proper period of time that I spent in Spain, which was about 3 months. And then I came back to Australia, started working, and I still had the travel bug and ended up moving over to London for a while. And look, London's great, but it chewed me up and it spat me out. It just did not like me. Yeah. I had so much bad luck. And also I think because deep down I wanted to be in Spain, but went to London more for the job opportunities, and I had some other friends there. And don't get me wrong, I had a wonderful time with the friends that were there, but it just wasn't right for me.
Yeah.
And so then when I was thinking, okay, I can't go home like this. I can't go on the tail end of a trip that hasn't worked out the way I wanted it to. I wanted this big overseas life experience. And it just felt right to go to Spain. And then in amongst all of that, it felt like this kind of vindication to go, you know what, I'm going to go study flamenco. I'm going to go specifically, I'm going to organize some lessons, I'm going to get myself a guitar, because that was a little bit of an idea when I was in Cardiff the first time, but it just didn't happen.
Did you play guitar before that?
I did, yeah. So I had already been playing guitar since maybe when I was about 15 or 16.
So that would have helped.
Yeah, just the only thing was I was self-taught, and I've always been really proud of that, but it just got to the point that then when I was in front of a teacher going, oh my goodness, there's so much that I don't know. And I think that I had always been, and probably still am, a very visual player and a lot of muscle memory, not really understanding what was going
on. But you still played.
Correct.
You still played. And that counts for a lot. And it doesn't matter what style of guitar you play. Look, flamenco is quite complex.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But when you know how to play a guitar and you know how to play music already, it's a big step forward.
Yeah.
You know,
very but true.
Yeah, it's good that you're in, and you didn't just go, I'm just going to learn flamenco, and just because there's a lot of people who went and then left straight away.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people who went. You know, I'm gonna study flamenco.
Yeah,
whether it's dance or it's singing or it's guitar, and they go that no, it's not for me.
Not for you, yeah.
So
yeah,
8 hours later,
yeah,
out of it.
Yeah, good point. I think maybe the fact that it was such a slow burn and it wasn't It doesn't feel like, even looking back, it doesn't feel like any of that was on a whim. It felt like years and years and years of building towards me connecting to flamenco. Yep. And then eventually learning it. So maybe that added to the sustainability.
No, you were meant to be there. You were meant to be there. I had a massive experience when I lived there. My experience was quite, it was good, but it was quite a solitary experience. It was like
Yeah.
And it was like, this is what you need to do now while you're here, and nothing else. You need to concentrate on this. And all I saw was just that.
Yeah.
But I think I missed out on some other beautiful things around, you know?
Yeah.
And it was a journey. It was definitely a journey. Mind you, there was a bit of loneliness as well, because you miss your family and you miss this, but you're just there for that one thing. And then you miss on having, you don't stop, you forget about having fun. I didn't have a lot of fun. Like, it was just flamenco.
And
it was like,
I think I had a bit of the opposite experience. And for that reason, interestingly, in the year or 14 months I was in Granada, I always laugh when I say 14 months. It sounds like a young child, the age of a young child. But anyway, worked out to be 14 months being stuck over there with COVID, but happy to be stuck over there. I think that there was a lot of that enjoyment, particularly after my experience in London. It was kind of like, you need to have fun here. Yeah. You need to really enjoy the culture. And for that reason, over the time that I was there, I don't think I progressed as far as perhaps someone else spending that much time there. And I don't feel bad about that. I'm really pleased with the way I spent my time there. But I think it's almost ironic that, thanks to having that foundation, then coming back and then we went into lockdowns and I had study time and yeah. and it was something that helped me feel connected to Spain while now being so far away
yeah.
that I think most of my improvement has happened since I left.
But that's
yeah.
your journey.
Yeah.
Your journey, it doesn't have to necessarily be that in this period, I'm going to learn all this. I want to be up to this stage or up to this level. I used to think like that. I don't think like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't thought like that in ages. It's like, it's a matter of where you are in the world. It's your own journey. Yeah. Wherever you are, you can be in the middle of Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
If you need to go through that journey, you'll go through the journey.
Yep.
It's not, and it's not even about having the best teachers or this or that. It's about learning things from people. Some things that I learned weren't even from musicians from in Spain. They weren't from musicians. They were just from the locals.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the way sometimes you learn from the culture, you learn from a certain person or, you know, even to this day, even learning every day, it's like you learn things every day from people and from things that you wouldn't expect. So, yeah, it's something when you're learning music and it's like you're so in depth involved and you think it's the most complicated thing. But I think sometimes taking a step back and looking to it from a bigger thing, which only comes with experience. I mean, you get a bit mature and you can see that, but you get to see it in a different light and you think, I took it too seriously.
Yeah. The wisdom of retrospect, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what it is. Like when we were talking about this with Dan, about seeing things from a different aspect and different genres and different instrumentations and that all comes about from arrangements, arranging, you know, what do you want to do? What do you want to play? And there's so much beauty, so much music out there. And it's not just about one sort of thing. You have to look at it from a bigger perspective because even if you're playing flamenco, you don't want to always play it by yourself. Mm.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So you have to learn how to accompany or you have to learn how to play with other musicians that don't play flamenco, especially here. And this is the beauty that we have here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So many different musicians.
Yeah.
I enjoy playing with different musicians from different genres with different instruments because that's more challenging for me. Trying to see how you fit in that puzzle, you know. That jigsaw piece that doesn't fit anywhere. You're trying to press it in with your thumb, and you just mangle it.
Yeah.
That's me. Yeah. So you're getting the scissors out.
Sure.
But that's all part of the journey.
And I think it's a really interesting perspective because if I look at the flamenco study, I think that it is really formative for any other type of music that I ever want to play because it's been my first real introduction to guitar technique or really having to understand what's going on.
Perhaps it's your benchmark.
And so I think that breadth that you're describing, I think I can get that to a certain extent, but there's something that feels right at the moment as much as possible to dive headfirst into the flamenco. And of course, I mean, you know, I'll sing at weddings and sing Shania Twain and love that as well. Yeah. So there's a place for all those different things.
Of course.
But I think that part of the reason why I feel it's really important for me to commit to my flamenco is to commit to a certain level of guitar that will get me to, and then I'll have the ability to spread out a bit more.
It's even a bit more than that. You've got a connection with the actual genre.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only the guitar.
Yeah.
You connect to the genre. Mm-hmm. So through the guitar.
Yep.
And that's a good thing. That's why you're doing it. That's your why.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got that connection. You love the genre. You love the music. You were saying before when you heard it, the dissonance. You know, you wanna portray that now on your instrument. You wanna do that. So and that's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing. I remember when I showed Amla first flamenco and I showed her Jorge Pardo and she buzzed out.
Yeah, did you have it?
Yeah, I had a moment.
Yeah,
then,
out of body experience.
And,
yes.
Yeah, and then I showed her the Paco Sextet and it's just different.
Yeah.
She goes, I want to hear more of this.
Yeah.
And then she had no choice. She had to because then she played with me. So
yeah.
But it's that
it's that interest that you have, that that's the drive. Mm. You love that aspect, yep. You know, and that's where everything lies, not only for music, but you have to have the drive for everyday life.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, it helps if you like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. For sure. And I think that one of the reasons why music is now more fundamental than ever, I mean, I went through a long period of time where it was just, it's a hobby. What a nice hobby. What a nice hobby. And then to actually turn that corner and say, no, I am now working as a professional musician. But the way that I look at it, even if I look at my speech pathology career, because that's such a giving profession, that it's all focused on the client's goals, the patient's goals, and that's what it's there for, and that's wonderful and really fulfilling. But I think just the further I go through that career path, you realize you have to have something that, like you've said, that you just love, something that you love, something that fills you up, so that then you can sustain the work that you're doing for other people as well.
Definitely.
Yeah. That's going to be used for the day.
Yeah.
That's your fuel. That's your, your soul food. Yeah.
I actually had a job interview once, and the question was, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Mm-hmm. And I said, playing the guitar. That's the first thing I said. And then I think I covered myself really well by then explaining what I just said there. Like, it's really important that we have something to fill ourselves up while we're supporting others. But it just flew out of me. I couldn't even control it. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Oh, playing the guitar. And fortunately, the person interviewing had a musical theater background. So she actually enjoyed that creative element.
But how comfortable would that feel? And how natural would it feel?
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah.
You can't go back. You've entered the dark side.
Yeah.
You're there, you can't get out of it. Mm-hmm. Do your parents have a background in music or anyone in the family?
Absolutely not. Nothing. I remember once going to a music shop when I was younger, and I was looking for something I can't even remember. And the guy was saying to me, oh, so what do you play? And I was saying all these instruments. He turns to my sister and says, what do you play? And she goes, netball. It was just the most perfect comment. I find it really interesting that there isn't that that influence. But then what I've realized the older I'm getting is that I think I was just destined to be the black sheep in the family. I think that I was destined to be different from whatever was presented to me. So can you imagine? I would have been, we are soulmates. So who knows? Maybe I would have been, let's say if I'd been born to a family of incredible musicians, I would have been the one going, no, I want to be different. I'm going to go crochet for the rest of my life. Yeah, that's it. So I think that there has been something really special about coming to music myself. And I mean, my parents did encourage me into music through, say, music lessons when I was younger. But to very briefly explain the pathway, so I started with keyboard lessons after school in primary school, but it was the classes where the teachers change every week, and it's with, say, however many other kids.
Yeah.
And after a few years of that, my sister was doing it as well, my parents just thought, you know what, they're not learning anything. Let's take them out of this and take them to a proper piano teacher. And this teacher was brilliant, but just, you know, when you don't quite gel with a person, and I was quite young and timid and coming from keyboard and going to an actual piano, she was getting me to do push-ups against the wall and said, you know, give up everything else that you do, any sport, any extracurricular, you just need to practice all the time.
Old school.
Yeah, absolutely. And so fortunately not. Maybe there was one under the lid of the piano, who knows. Absolutely. At that point, I think that takes me to about grade 4, grade 5, and I just completely gave up. It was too much, and I wasn't really getting anywhere with it. And then over the next 3 years, I honestly forgot everything. I could not play a single thing. And then just some friends at high school, I saw that they were playing. Maybe. Just the ominous of that cane somewhere. So friends of mine were playing, and then just watching them, I just thought to myself, I wonder if I could get back into it. So we still had a little keyboard at home, and that's kind of where the self-taught side of things comes into it, where I think it was really important that I had a period of time where I was self-taught, or I wouldn't have fallen back in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it got to the point where I thought, okay, I'm not really understanding what's going on. I can play it. I can play this piece because I've learned it from memory, but if I make one mistake, it's gone. I don't understand what's happening. And so that sees me through to maybe year 8. And then in year 9, I thought, well, if I've done this with the piano, why don't I try that with the guitar? And then in year 11, 12, I played the cello for a little bit with a similar teacher. So that didn't work out either.
Teachers.
Yeah. And I think that part of it for me, if I think of my personality, again, the psychology, it's going to keep coming up. I think that I've always enjoyed that thrill of being a very skilled beginner. that you start something new and you go, wow, I'm opening up this world. But then, of course, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. Mm. And there have been times throughout my life, even with music, that I've hit that snag of going, oh, things are getting hard. I might just go back to the things I know. So it was a much bigger deal than I think I've ever given myself credit for to say, you know what, I'm actually going to stick to this. I'm going to dedicate myself to an instrument. I'm going to keep pushing and trying to move forward with it rather than just jumping over to the next thing.
I think that's a case of maturity as well, right? You know, when you're all up into the twins and stuff, I think you think kind of differently.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you start getting older, you tend to understand it a bit better.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you stipulate, you think, you know what, I'm going to have to go through that period of, you know, where it's going to be hard. But
yeah.
You cross over and you got your own ways and mechanisms of doing it. But once you get over that, then you start learning new things.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a beginner again. It gets exciting again.
Yeah.
It gets exciting again. And it gets exciting, especially when you start playing with people.
Mm-hmm.
You start, you know, getting different sounds.
Yeah.
And collaboration, mm-hmm. the accompanying, the playing together, the harmonies as we were saying before, you know, playing that, playing this. I felt that when one of the best bands that are together, flamenco bands, and I thought that was that with Amla.
Mm-hmm.
And another couple of colleagues, Katarina was in the band, Rosie was in the band,
mm-hmm.
and things just clicked straight away.
With the clicky things or without the clicky things?
Yeah, the clicky things.
Yeah.
But everything just amazing. Really, really fast.
Yeah.
And then COVID hit. And our concert was in the first weekend of the first lockdowns.
Mm.
And we never performed with that band.
That's heartbreaking.
Mm.
That is heartbreaking. We had different to be in the audience
and stuff. Uh-huh. We were prepared ready and it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
But I felt that the beauty of everyone collaborating, everyone putting in everything. Mm-hmm. Everything was happening and it was such a great vibe, such a great thing. And you just had to live in the moment.
Uh-huh.
It's not gonna happen again.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was such a good band. It was so exciting.
I wish I was a fly on the wall.
It was exciting because Amla, Tomet had heard something, he used to listen to it and stuff, and he was the bass player and cello.
Yeah.
Volga hadn't listened to it, so Amla was coming into it. So these are people who haven't heard it before, and they've come in, and we also started playing for them.
Wow.
It was like, they've had that happen before here in Melbourne, like with any of my bands. And it just sort of, and even Katarina goes, this is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Uh-huh.
So, and that was the best part of that group. And that actually convinced me to actually record and start recording those pieces, and it was a great period because I was really scared of recording. I hadn't done anything in like 10 years.
Yeah.
And
recording can be pretty awful. We should put that out there.
You obviously think, but it's not.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to getting to that
realization.
I reckon as good as performing, it's a different lane, if you want to call it, than performing. Like creating is a different.
Yeah, great.
Just things falling into place, and you just get to see and hear
different
things. But it's got beauty in all respect.
Mm-hmm.
What's next for Laura de la Vida?
You know what? It's funny that you mentioned Katarina because I said to her recently, so a very, very skilled flamenco dancer. Mm-hmm.
She's the best.
Call her a pocket rocket.
That and everything else. I have said to her that I refuse to leave this earth until I can accompany flamenco dancing. So I'll get there, and I really do acknowledge that it's a whole other skill set that I'm, you know, entering into, and we'll give it the time that it takes. But I've got some guidance here to my left.
You need to guide you, so it's not as hard as you think.
Mm-hmm. I'll do the clicky things.
Is
feel and connecting to the dancer, and you're gonna combust quite well,
mm-hmm.
which you're good with.
Oh, It has its moments. So, but yeah, working on polishing that up at the moment.
Well, that's exciting though.
Yeah. Like to. I think that I've always found it really fascinating in terms of how in flamenco the guitar just has to be kind of watching and paying
it's
attention. Yeah. And whereas I think that, you know, here, let's say we're singing a pop song and you've got someone singing with you, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, and they come and match the guitar. Whereas you have to be more kind of organic than that and you know, staying behind and watching. And so that to me still feels really mystical. And I'm sure that once I do it, it will still feel mystical, but there's still some mystery there as well. So I'll get there.
The way I see it, the hardest instrument in flamenco is the cante, the vocal.
Mm.
The one that everyone has to rely on is the guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that needs the most stamina is the dancer.
Uh-huh. That's such a great way to think of it.
Yeah.
So the guitarist has to watch everything. It has to be in tune with everything. And if you've got a percussionist, mm-hmm. has to be in tune with percussionist, with the singer, see the signs, see where they're calling, uh-huh.
they're coming in, where the dancer's going to get up and accompany that, accompany the
singer, the percussionist, the palm master, everything. The palm master are called add-ons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're playing.
Bang. You know? So
there you go, yep.
Everything has to work in sync like every other band, but the guitarist has to be aware of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And now when the guitarist comes to the point where he doesn't have to think about it,
mm-hmm.
that's where, you know, it's working.
Yeah.
But you also have to be connected with good musicians as well. If you're connected, if you're playing at that level and you're connected with musicians at this level, it gets a bit difficult in flamenco because you've got dancers, you've got this, you've got that. And if they're not up to that level, then when you have to be careful as a guitarist, because if you're going to bring down this, then you're bringing them and they're probably not used to getting brought down to that level. So that's what I noticed.
Yep.
That's what I noticed, sure. You know, especially in Spain as well, like in performing. Like if you're not up to scratch, they're not gonna wait for you.
Yeah. See then, how easy it sounds? Absolutely not. But I think that's the magic of it as well, that when you can coordinate all those things, and I guess, you know,
but that's the driver as well.
Yeah, for
because
sure.
Because if you want to improve, well, I have to improve. So I have to improve on something. What do I need to improve? You have to ask yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, when I was in Spain, for me, it wasn't about rhythm. I had the rhythm down pat. It wasn't a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the actual playing of the guitar. It wasn't falsettos. I didn't want any of that. I wanted to know bit of technique and the shortcuts of how they because it was more advanced, right? And the accompanying to cante.
Mm-hmm.
Dancing was for me came pretty natural, but then again I played pretty much every day at Amor de Dios in Madrid, and I played in the classes.
Wow.
So for me that was my experience, and you hear
everyone
it's getting drilled into your head. Yeah. Right. But the accompanying to cante, to the voice, to singing, for me that was very crucial.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved from Madrid down south to Sevilla, my teacher then opened up a whole other can of worms.
Yeah.
And I thought I needed to improve here. It wasn't that. I needed to improve as a whole, because when you listen to music, you need to improve as a whole. So even though you want to concentrate on a company, you got to know what you're doing and why you're doing it. Why is he going into a G minor or she?
Yeah.
Why is that happening? Mm-hmm. Why are you anticipating this next? Because you know that's the structure, right?
Yeah.
But even so, it's the anticipating that is very important. I feel that that you need to be very familiar with the genre.
Mm-hmm.
With flamenco, you have to be very familiar.
Yeah.
I think with Balkan music, you have to be even more familiar because there's a lot more moving parts.
Sure.
But I had that experience from there, and then I saw like it was easier for me to ease into it and listen to a singer. And mind you, my dad was a singer, so I accompanied him all my life. So it was a bit easier for me.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people that find that even to this day, accompanying other people in any genres, they find that a bit intimidating.
Yeah. And I think even though what I've mentioned before about, you know, I would love to accompany dancers, I do have that appreciation for the fact that it has to come from the singing as well. And so the ways I'm trying to work on that now is to, you know, find just a pure singing track and play along with that. And I think it's just such a fascinating kind of way that those two things blend together. And if you're not on board for all parts of it, you kind of can't be on board for any of them.
So this is the challenge here as well. And sorry, Amla, we're going on a flamenco.
No, it's interesting. Yeah,
I want to hear more flamenco flute as well. You're amazing.
The challenge here is that in the past we didn't have singers here, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to do a gig just you as a guitarist and a dancer. So apart from the lovely Rosie, who is also a dancer and a singer,
amazing voice.
But before her, it was hard. You know? So I learned how to sing.
Yeah.
And I sung and accompanied myself and sung. You know, some easy things, but you know, I learned a lot from that. Because I learned that I couldn't stand soloing all the time and doing falsettos all the time and especially for dancers when you need that singing. So I learned.
Yeah.
And that was the driving force for me. Mm-hmm. I learned how to sing. Not that I'm a flamenco singer, but I know the phrasing, I know how things work, and I can accompany, I know where to come in and go out, and I know, and we can do gigs. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like a natural thing for me to get into it. I didn't find it that hard, I did find it hard playing all the time and playing all the time and playing and playing, constantly playing and doing melodies constantly. And it's not that I couldn't do it, it's just I found it really monotonous and really, there was no... There was no point to it, and that was the driver.
Yeah,
but for you, you're already a singer already, and I've heard you sing and play. It's fantastic, and hopefully we can do a gig one day together.
I'd love to. You know? I still find it quite difficult to sing some of the flamenco phrasing, but I definitely think that if I do, like what you've said, if I do become more familiar with that and try and put that singing towards that, then that's just going to help everything. Everything flourish.
There's a few tricks that when you're playing and singing, there's a few tricks, and if anyone's listening, they can come to give me a call or message me, and I can teach you.
I can highly recommend
music pro services. But there are a few things that I found myself, and they're quite effective. But those things I found out for myself. No one taught me.
Mm.
But I think if you've got the musical brain. Mm-hmm. Not just a singing brain, it'll help, which you have. You know.
Yeah, great.
We'll take that offline.
Yeah. And I think it's just on the note of, say, singing in general, I think that one of the reasons why my voice has developed kind of the most it ever has in these last 6 months, if I'm honest, has been because you are playing these gigs and you put your heart and soul into the guitar and you might be enjoying it. It might be in the background. People can appreciate it. But then when you sing as well, it's suddenly a spectacle. Mm. And that, I mean, you know, that's just the beauty of the human voice. I guess we connect to it so readily, and it feels really powerful to have that. I think that's what I'm really enjoying about it. And it's not to say that if I'm playing, let's take a restaurant gig where you are in the background, I don't really have the intention to turn heads. I want to create an atmosphere. But then when you start singing and then you do notice people turn, maybe smile at you, or you can see them tapping their foot along, and you think, well, here we are all connecting. Yeah, what more definitely. Could you possibly
Music
want?
Is all about connection. Yeah. It's all about connection. And I'm going to use you as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Amla does looping and sings.
Oh, wow.
Right.
How have I not seen this already?
The singing is on and off depending on how confident I'm feeling.
So this is why I wanted to ask you, because this is quite a good topic. Singing, and you've only recently started singing on your solo gigs, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And what was that point for you? Where did that turn? Where was that turn where you thought, you know what, I'm going to give this a crack and I'm going to start singing, and you've improved. So where was that turning point? Where was it?
I guess lockdown as well. Mm. Like I never intended to actually do any singing solo, just harmony girl. And I don't know how it even happened. I just started jamming with the looper, which was new for me as well. And I ended up creating a song, and I created a loop, and then lyrics literally just came to me. I wasn't even thinking about it. And I had a melody, and that's how I started singing it. Mm-hmm. And then, that's it. That's pretty much the story.
That's great.
And then you improve. Like you, I don't know what whether you were listening to, or you listen to certain types of music or anything, but your singing changed.
Yeah, I didn't like my tone. I'm still not a huge fan of it, but I've just been practicing more, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed what I'm working on. It's all muscular. And I've been noticing that all the gigs I've done, I have been extremely nervous with the vocals, and it's taken me back to when I first started gigs on my flute, and I was really nervous as well. So, but it constricts everything here.
Absolutely.
So I've kind of I've been in and out of "Oh, should I sing?" I'm not there yet. But the only way to get through that is to keep performing, obviously. Practice, just doing lots of. I'm doing more warm ups, and I'm just noticing more self awareness around my vocal cords. I think I was tensing up quite a bit, and now I'm just relaxing a bit more. Okay. And
if you ever need any pointers from the speech pathology side, but it's so true everything that you say. And I've got a friend of mine who is a speech pathologist as well. We met through a job that we shared, and she's also a singing teacher. And oh my goodness, Emily, if you're listening to this, you're another person that I have to thank. And just to have someone like that who's got, say, the anatomical knowledge and then the musicality. But then one thing that I've always loved about talking to her about it is she brings in any of the psychological components. We can already tell that I'm a big fan of psychology. And she'll say, well, what psychosocial barriers do you have to actually singing? What's stopping you from shooting your voice out? Or what's making you think that this note has to be such a belting note when you've got a really nice gentle tone? And sometimes it can be some of the things that she said is, you know, consider when we were growing up in the 90s that a ballad had to have that massive high note. But maybe now that's not what is even, let's say, in fashion. And so there's that ability to maybe move away from that and find what sits nicely with you and own it. Own it and have that conviction in it to say it's not a carbon copy of the track, but it's good in my own way. And that's not because I've said I can't do it that way, so therefore I have to fall back on my vices. It's really just this idea of no, you're interpreting it and you're using your instrument and making it sound good and searching for that sound.
I found that when I started singing a bit more like a few years ago, and my tonal range started expanding. And then I stopped singing, and then it started.
It's exactly it. You just got to keep training the muscles.
The muscles, like they can atrophy.
And you were saying before
how
you found your range with the Dolly Parton song.
Yeah, because I've been singing a bit. I've been being forced to sing a bit more in the mariachi trio. But that's actually opened up. I think that's probably why I've improved as well, because I'm singing more in the in the mariachi. And I found my range by a Dolly Parton song came on, and then the boss man told me to sing it. I'm like, oh, F sharp major. This is so easy. And I was just floating through it.
Amazing.
I didn't think I'd have the same range as Dolly Parton. But
I think it's also really funny that because the voice, or at least just speaking, let's say, if we take singing out of it, just speaking is so innate. We just grow up, we learn to speak, and it's this amazing process that I know we've just said that it's so muscular, but you don't really make that connection to actually stop and think about it. Whereas let's say if we were learning technique on the guitar, it's really obvious. If you want your fingers to be able to move faster, you're going to have to do these repetitive muscular movements. But there's something about the voice that it just feels like it's just inside me. It's just this abstract thing that I just decide what note comes out. Exactly. And you know what? What you said earlier about is anyone in my family musical? There's actually quite a bit of musical, I want to say, trauma in my family that, for example, mum, when she was at school, got sat out of a choir because she and awful. I mean, your reaction to that is absolutely spot on, and it stuck with her. And so I grew up thinking, okay, well, if no one in my family can sing, that must mean I can't sing. And so even up to say year 7-8, I would mime in the school choir. I would just lip sync.
So you weren't actually singing?
That's I wouldn't.
Trauma.
And so it's, I think that is just that idea of what you said of you're born with it or you're not, until you stop, you get out of that mentality and say, no, it's trainable. Maybe I won't have the exact same tone as someone else because of my anatomy. So there is an element of what you're born with or what you're not born with. But with what you have, you can train it to sound really good. And I'm hell-bent on getting mum some singing lessons. Or myself.
Putting it back into the choir.
Yeah, that's it.
And imagine she gets sat out again.
That would be my fault in that case.
You could create the choir.
Yes, exactly.
But you're right. I think everything is trainable, you know.
Mate,
if I can sing, anyone can sing. But look, and you're right about, you know, training and all of that. But we don't really. And you're right about not saying really that it's, you know, it's an anatomical thing. But
when you have a virus, well, not always, but if you've got a cold or something, mm-hmm. and you can't use it, then you think, oh no, well, this is it's mechanical, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And you think, oh, I can't talk. Mm. And then you think, oh, it's actually it's an instrument, right? Mm-hmm. And you can tune an instrument to your liking.
That's it.
So that I think that's very true.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's up here.
Yeah, a lot of it's psychological and catching yourself even in the moment before you start the gig. I've noticed that my throat, any singing that's not a harmony, I just feel I can pinpoint it now. I can feel it closing up, the larynx closing up, and they go.
For sure. I noticed that.
Yeah, it's psychological.
Yeah, sure. it's so psychological. Yeah. It's just kind of breaking that habit and noticing it and going, oh yeah, that old chestnut.
For sure. I noticed the bad habit. Maybe not a bad habit, but let's just say it was a habit that if I were ever singing a melody, I would never hit the note. I'd always scoop up to the note or scoop down to the note.
Yep.
And not in a way that it was stylistic, because obviously you can do that and choose to do that and it sounds really nice, but it was just this idea of
a secure way to get it.
I will not hit this first go, so I'm going to rise to it or fall to it. And so, you know, you see that those little steps along the way to go, all right, if I'm doing this, I'm going to do it properly. Sometimes it's the teeniest, tiniest step of just saying, I need to aim for the actual note.
Yeah.
I need to just go for it and train going for it and hitting it rather than the safety blanket, like you said. So,
but that's a good thing because you're aware of it. I've played in bands where singers aren't aware of anything and they've hit the note and it's so wrong. And they think it's right. They think it's spot on. Yeah. They're not listening to anything or anyone's like,
with the
key, no key, no rhythm, but they're going for it and they're having such a good time.
Yep.
Whereas our ears are
bleeding.
I
imagine you wouldn't have been having such a good time having to play along with that.
Because you're trying to think, I think my guitar's out of tune.
I've done that before. Like, am I out of tune?
Yeah.
And you've got perfect pitch, so
probably
not.
But look, I sometimes scoop the violin, especially I'm going to a new octave range at the moment, and I'll be like, it's very obvious.
But then you've got a fretless instrument. You can do that.
Absolutely. Yes, but look, there's a point that it's a barrier I'm working on going, okay, here. Yeah. Oh no, that's not right. I'll try again. Yeah. You're gonna hit that note.
Yep.
It's when you overshoot the runway and you run out of board. That's where you become a bit of a problem.
But a wise man recently said to me, "What is sharp?"
You see. Oh, that's awesome. Lada, it's been a pleasure having you on.
This has been so much fun. Thank you so much.
No, we'll have to get you on again. It's such a different take on how we use our natural instruments, and it's a different approach.
Yep.
You know, it's
very fascinating. I've learned a lot from you.
Yeah, thank you. Always love knowledge is power, so love spreading it.
Yes, yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for being on.
Thank you.
We're just gonna make a mention of our
Sponsors. We'd like to thank Cake Eclipse for these.
I'm so excited.
Chocolate mud cake.
Amazing. If this interview couldn't have been any more fun, we're finishing it with cake. What more could I possibly
actually,
ask
no,
for?
We're finishing it with.
That's right. I'm going to put my cake down.
No, you don't have to put it down. You can have it. But we're going to finish off with one of your original pieces.
Yes.
Yes, fantastic.
Yay.
So stick around, stay tuned. Until next time, ciao.
See ya.
Bye. Thank you.
The Strike A Chord Podcast, presented to you by ValentinoFlamenco.com and AmlaMusic.com.